Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Odorico. And before I introduce tonight's special guest, I just have a few quick reminders for those of you that are tuning in live this evening. If you want to call into the program and either talk to myself or my guest, you can call into area code 646-716-4667, or you can email me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com if you have any questions that you want to pose throughout the show or if you have any suggestions for future programming. You can also visit us on Facebook if you'd like us on Facebook. It's the page is facebook.com/golftalkliveblog. Make sure you put the blog on the end there. And if you want to send me a tweet, it's my Twitter handle is Ted and Buck CEO. If you want to send me a tweet once in a while. But anyways, just to move forward here, my special guest this evening is Mr. David Wedzik. He's the owner of Golf Evolution in Erie, Pennsylvania. We were just talking here a few moments off air. He's also the Worldwide Director of Instruction for Medicus Golf, and he also co-authored a great set of DVDs, Pure Strike, Five Simple Keys. David, welcome to the show.
Ted, thanks for having me.
Well, it's good to have you. We were just, as we say, we're just talking off the air here about the weather that we've been experiencing. Of course, everybody's been hearing me grumble a little bit the last few weeks here about all this rain that we've been getting. And what's it been like up in here? Have you guys been getting a lot of rain as well? Or
It's actually been a pretty good summer. It's been a cool summer, so people are enjoying that. You know, when you live in the Northeast, sometimes everybody thinks you get these, you know, perfect 75 degree days, and we're used to getting a little more heat than this. But it's been a really great summer. Temperatures have been, for the last couple of months, temperatures have really averaged in the mid 70s. We've had a lot of sun.
Wow.
We had a rainy spring, but it's been a pretty good summer. And yeah, well, there's been a lot of golf being played, so it's been good for golfers.
Yeah, we unfortunately can't say the same down here in Florida. We've been getting, as we were just talking a few moments ago, a lot of rain down here, so it's been kind of a touch and go with some of the rounds. But we're making it through, and of course we're looking forward to a great fall and winter. One of the nice things, of course, being in Florida is that you can play all year round pretty much. So,
that's right.
But hopefully we'll make it through this hurricane season. But anyways, David, welcome again to the show, and I appreciate you coming on Golf Talk Live. And as I mentioned to David off air, I picked a couple of topics. I've been trying to think of some different things that we can talk about here on the program on Golf Talk Live. We've had a number of instructors come on and a few other golf industry types come on over the last several weeks. And I really want to try and pick something different each time. And one of the topics, David, that I wanted to start off with is talking about the average golfer. And, you know, there's a lot of different things that can be done to help them improve their game. But what I want to know is, and I guess the question that I'm going to pose to you is this, and then we're going to sort of break it down in this first segment, is some of the key elements to making a good player. We want to take that 20 or 25 plus handicap player and turn them into a good player. And as I said to you off air, we're not referring to necessarily a tour player, but just to make him into that better, maybe even a 10 handicap. What are some of the steps and what are some of the things that we need to focus on as instructors to make that transition to get them into a better player?
Yeah, you know, and I think that's a great question and a great topic because you've got so many, well, the masses of golfers out there are, you know, mainly in that 10 to 25 range, and they're all looking to figure out how to get to be a 5 or a 7 or an 8 or something better. And it's actually a big part of what we try to do on a daily basis at not only my Golf Evolution Academy but at Medicus, and it's really what the Five Simple Keys entire learning system is all about. You know, when we put things together and we go to try to make golfers better, you know, Medicus and Chuck Evans and myself, we wanted to create a system that allowed golfers, and this is really the way we look at it, allowed golfers to get better faster. And it's because we have access to so many golfers at Medicus, and we've heard them tell us now for the last couple of years that the reason that they believe they're not getting better is they don't have enough time. The game is taking, it's too much time to practice, it's too much time to go play, it's too much time to simply get better. And that's a problem, you know, if you're in the golf business, that's a problem to hear that. So, you know, we tried to create a system with the five simple keys that says if we look at golf instruction and we stop focusing on what we call the biggest variables in the game and think that those are going to make the biggest difference for golfers, you know, that, you know, maybe someone needs to swing a little bit slower or they need to stand
right.
perfectly like, you know, exactly like Adam Scott or exactly like Zach Johnson or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of looking at it that way, we're trying to look at it and say, we classified all the swings and we looked at swings for our last 100 years and focused really a lot on today's players and said, all right, look, what do these players have in common? And by getting to, that's what we call the five simple keys, and by getting to what they have in common, we try to just focus every player in one of those five key areas. And we've got some great research we've done. We've got graphs. We've got a lot of stuff from hundreds and hundreds of golfers that show if golfers
right.
can master more of these keys, so if a golfer can do one instead of none or two instead of one or three instead of two, if they can do more
right.
of these five things, their handicap drops. So that's how we focus. That's how we do things, and we focus in that. You know, I believe that that's, you know, whether you're focusing as a golf instructor on what we believe are the five keys or the five commonalities of the best players, or you're focusing on, you know, your areas, if you have things that are improving players and you have a small, tight focus to get them area to practice in, I think that's a good thing.
Right. One of the things, before we continue on, one of the things that we've talked about here a number of times, I think Chuck, in his segment when he was on the program, talked a little bit about it as well. But one of the areas that I think has really been lacking for the average golfer, obviously the tour players and things like that, they have it spot on. But I think one of the biggest areas that the average, and for obvious reason, lack is in the short game. And I think probably because it's been made kind of boring. I mean, everybody wants to, you know, we talked about this last week, Clint Wright and I on the program. You know, everybody wants to grab their driver and they want to hit
sure.
it, you know, 300 yards and so forth. And nobody really wants to spend their practice session around the putting green or chipping and so forth. That. They want to get out there and they want to see how far they can hit the ball. And really the mindset has been conditioned not only by instruction over the years, but also by the golf industry has sort of molded everybody and pushed them in that direction. So now we have to sort of unravel this and get them really to be focusing on the areas that they're going to be scoring. Because, you know, as Clint had mentioned last week, you know, you can hit your driver, you know, maybe 14 times in an average round where you're going to be hitting your other clubs and your putter particularly many more times throughout the round. So really your driver is something that you don't need to be focusing as much as you do as opposed to some of the other clubs in the bag and some areas of your golf. So is a short game a big part of the five simple keys?
Well, the short game isn't a part of the five simple keys system as it stands. Now, we do, with every golf school I do, with everything that Medicus does, with everything that Golf Evolution does on a daily basis, we focus a lot of time and energy on the right areas of the short game. The five simple keys system itself is not a short game system. It's what I would call a full swing system. But,
okay.
I mean, I would certainly agree with you that the short game is an area that people, well, I mean, it's quite simply, if you look at the number of lessons people take
right.
as it relates to full swing versus short game versus putting, there's a big discrepancy there. And I think that it's really, I think what's most important with the short game focus, so to speak, and getting people to understand how the short game can lower their scores is understanding mm-hmm. the, what I would call the statistics within the short game or what's at the core of really reducing scores within the short game. And an example of that might be that we know that great putters are great because they avoid three putts and they make the
right.
high, super high percentage of their 3 and 4 footers. They're not great putters because they make all kinds of 20 and 25 and 30 footers.
Right.
People may think that's the case, but that's really not the case. The guy who, I saw some statistics on this recently, and the guy who leads the PGA Tour, for example, in putts made over 15 feet or 20 feet, one year might lead it, and the next year might finish 150th. It's a very random
right.
statistic when you're trying to make long putts. So, you know, if I'm talking short game to people, I'm trying to get them to focus on a couple things to lower their scores. One, understand how important it is to make 3 and 4 footers. Those are crucial, and people would not. Golfers out there can't even imagine how much they'd lower their score if every single time they had a four-footer, they got
sure.
to pick it up and count it. A lot of them are doing that
right.
anyway, mind you. But
well,
if you know what I'm saying there, and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
it's knowing where to focus within the short game, I think, that becomes very important.
Well, and I think, and there's so much truth to that, because if you think about it for a second, I mean, you know, most of the greatest putters, if you look, you know, Ben Crenshaw comes to mind, and you know, Jim Furyk is certainly a good putter.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Faxon was probably
oh, yeah.
for many, many years one of the top putters. They were certainly good lag putters,
right.
but where they honed their skill was, like you say, from, you know, 4 or 5 feet in.
Right.
That's where they were dead on. I mean, you know, you obviously have to be able to get the putt up into that range. If you, let's say, if you hit the back of the green and you've got to leg it up into that range, you know, you obviously have to have some speed control and things like that. But, you know, there can be a little variance there, but you need to be accurate, as you said, within that three, 4 foot range at a high percentage, because, you know, it's great if you leg it up there close, but if you can't close the deal, now you're three putting.
That's right. Well, remember, I don't even know the season. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. I should know for sure. But it was it was Tigers maybe 2007 or 2008 season, one of those in there. And it was probably 2007 even, because 2008 was cut short. But where he made, I mean, he went an entire season and a half, something like that, without missing a putt inside 3 feet, 3.5 feet
yeah.
or something of that nature. I mean, it's almost absurd to think of that. But that can be done, because there are putts within that length if you know what you're doing and you're striking the putts with a square face and solid on the blade, and you know, you can make a lot of those putts if you have good solid mechanics and understanding of what's going on. So, you know, that's where the luck is kind of, I guess, taken out of the mix, and it becomes very much skill in those ranges. And it also goes to, with great lag putting, it goes to why I believe myself that pitching the ball, or chipping and pitching the ball around the green, is almost more important. Well, I think it is more important. I would tell my students to spend more time doing that than they do spending time hitting 20-foot putts. And that's because I believe that, you know, if you hit – there are 10-footers, 15-footers, 20-footers that you can hit great putts, and just because of a subtle misread or a bump in the green or anything else – you can miss. There's not much you can do about it. But if you're a really good chipper of the golf ball, you can, even with subtle bumps in the green or a misread or things like that, you know, even with a mistake happening within there or something unlucky, you can still pitch your ball within that 3-4 foot range. And, you know, again, just the percentages go, they skyrocket when you have putts inside that length.
Well, and you know, you're right about Tiger. I think it was around the 2006 and 07 years that he was just phenomenal within that range.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as Clint had mentioned last week, we talked about this, and I think it's a combination. But he mentioned really that one of the issues, I said to him, I sort of posed the question as to why he thought Tiger was sort of falling by the wayside. And it really becomes down to, and as he indicated, and I think he's right, is a trust issue. He just doesn't trust himself. And therefore, he's no longer, has that confidence that he once had. And, you know, I think that that's why he's not, because if you look at his putting, you know, everybody has a good round and a bad round, but his putting consistently has been bad now for quite some time. And, I mean, you know, he's still striking the ball well. I mean, you know, he's still putting it in play for the most part. I think certainly his wedge play isn't as solid as it was at one point, but that could be a combination of things. Could be the trust issue, as Clint had mentioned. Could also be, you know, an age thing as well. He's just not, you know, maybe
sure.
the LASIK surgery isn't working as well as he thought it was. You know, I mean, there's a mirror. You could dissect it for days. But
the
one key area, like you said, his short putting is not as solid, and therefore he doesn't have that confidence and trust in his short putts that he once did. And I think that's what's really hurting him, because he's getting in the green, you know, maybe in two shots for most of his holes, and certainly one with the par threes, but his
sure.
putting is letting him down.
Yeah.
Right. And,
I mean,
and
I think that's true. He definitely has not been as good a putter. I mean, there's no question.
All right. So let's get down to brass tacks here.
Yeah.
As a 25 handicapper, let's say we've got Bob over here, and he's a 25 handicapper.
Mm-hmm.
What has he got to be doing? What's he got to be focusing on to really to break through that glass ceiling,
yeah,
if you will, and start.
So I would look at it this way, and this is where, you know, I think I've spent a lot of time at Medicus looking at the statistics around how scores drop, and even though we know, you know, half the shots or so are taken with the short game, and we believe the short game is extremely important, and it is, the biggest difference, a very noticeable difference statistically between a 4 handicap, let's say, and a 10
right.
handicap and a 25 handicap is the number of greens those players hit in regulation.
Right.
I listened to a little bit of your show last week with Clint, and I think he hit some points spot on in some of the things he said. And then if you also can, but you also have to consider that when we talk about the short game shots and the third shot and those kind of things, those only are important if you can advance, if you can get that advancement part of the game or the advancement of the ball in those first two shots relatively solidly. if you're topping balls off tees, slicing them into the woods, it's taking you 3-4 shots to get to the green. I mean, that, you know, you can look at it, so, you know, the you know, all the
right.
great quotes about statistics. You can look at these things on from both sides, because, you know, you can be the greatest putter in the world, but if it takes you 6 to get to the green, it doesn't.
Well,
you know, the scores don't pan out. And I know one thing that is true in looking at the pure statistics from low to high handicappers, and the number one differentiator, the one number one difference maker to shooting lower scores, and again, this is just statistically, this isn't my opinion, is hitting more greens in regulation.
Right.
And you do that by being able to advance your ball relatively solidly, avoid penalty shots, you know, do these things that allow you to do that. And so, you know, I don't think it can be ever, I can ever look at it and say it's one single thing, but I would be in the camp that would be trying to, you know, make sure that my players had a solid enough short game, but I would want them to be able to, what I would call, advance the ball solidly.
Sure.
And be able to get, and when it's funny, because when we teach players, I teach them the keys to better ball striking, and I'm asking them to understand that they don't always even have to hit greens in regulation. We call them near greens in regulation. We want them to be able to get that ball around the green somewhere so that they can take advantage of their short game and the work they've done there.
You know, I was trying to think, just to sort of prove the point about advancing the ball, I was trying to think of the gentleman that did that, and you may know when I start talking about it. There was an old video, this VHS, by the way, for those of you listening. And all I know is his first name was Wally, and I can't think of his last name, but he did a very interesting video, and he talked about really the importance of just making good, solid contact, advancing the ball, and going from there. And he played 3 holes. He played a par 3, par 4, and a par 5. And he only played with a 7-iron, a pitching wedge, and a putter. Never took a driver, any metal out there. And the interesting thing was, at the end of the 3 holes, he was actually 1 under. And the point that he was making was, you don't have to hit it. And, you know, of course, this is going back, you know, at the very beginning, before, you know, metal, when the metal woods were first sort of coming on the scene. So, you know, they weren't hitting at 300 yards. But his point was that, you know, everybody was sort of focusing on having to you know, belt it, you know, a great distance down there. But it was really more about the accuracy and making solid contact. And as you say, advancing the ball. And he proved the point that you don't have to necessarily be a long hitter, but you do have to be accurate and consistent with your shots in order to get yourself in position to be able to do that. And I think he ended up, he parred the par 3, and if I remember correctly, he birdied the 5 or something like that. But he ended up with 1 under over 3. And his point was that you don't have to have all of this necessarily technology, especially today with these long drivers and things like that, to shoot low scores. It's all about, you know, your technique and your fundamentals, and how you're playing the game really is going to define how you're going to score.
Yeah, I like it. I don't know if that was – I'm not sure, because I remember sort of what you're talking about. I don't know if that was like a Wally Armstrong thing going way back.
Yes,
or,
thank you.
I think
yes,
that might
was.
I think
thank
that
you.
Might have been it. But, yeah, that's
yeah, it was Wally
my memory serves me
now,
right. That's
is,
what I thought. But
Yeah. Now, and I realize that, you know, the game has progressed and it's moved on, and you know, maybe his ideas, but some of those old ways of thinking were very smart. And when you think about it, you know, even in today's golfer, you look at let's take the seniors as an example. And I'm not talking the senior tour. I'm just talking a senior golfer. You know, they're not hitting at 250 yards even most of them anymore. They're lucky if they can hit it two or some less than that, maybe two and a quarter. Some of the better players. So they're not hitting it as far as they used to at one point. And that's really the top in the seniors, because most of them, even with the technology and that with the drivers, they're not really getting, you know, 20, 30 yards like, you know, advertised. It's just not happening. You know, and I'm not, and I've said this many times, I'm not afraid to, you know, to say it, but we all know that the manufacturers are embellishing somewhat. I mean, if you don't have the ability to make solid contact, I don't care what driver or club you put in somebody's hand, if they can't hit the ball properly, and I know hit's a bad word in this industry, but you know what I'm talking about.
No, fine with me, yeah.
You know, if you can't strike the ball well to begin with, it doesn't matter what club you have in your hand. You might be able to avoid, you know, slicing it maybe a little more or hooking it a little bit more with some of the technology. But as far as getting it further down the field, if you are down the fairway, rather, you know, it's not going to matter what you put in your hand. If you don't have those fundamentals in place, it's not going to make a difference.
For sure, yeah. I mean, and if you, yeah, and I love, I mean, I love the golf companies out there. I think they're doing a fantastic mm-hmm. job advancing the game and building technology, and that's great. But yeah, if you were to listen to every one of them, you could, you know, you could gain 60 yards a year by just switching drivers. It's very true.
Well,
you need some ability to hit the ball solidly, or
well, sure.
None
it's
of it
like
really
you said,
matters.
I mean, you could have, and I'm not going to name names, but you could have the number one driver on tour, but if you're topping the ball every time or you're
right.
whiffing it or something like that, what good is it? You've just spent $300-$400 on a brand new driver. And that's why they keep buying, you know, this is, and again, I'm not here to knock, you know, I'm like you, I love the manufacturers as well, and they've
right.
done a great thing to advance the game. Same with the golf balls, you know, there's pros and cons against it. But,
exactly.
But my crux with the industry is, and obviously this is why I want to get a lot of different teaching professionals on this program, as well as others in the industry, and get them and really start talking about how we can help these people out there. Because there's a lot of people, I'll be honest, that are frustrated with their games right now. And it's not just because of the economy, and it's not just – but they're just frustrated. They're not improving. They don't understand well. And like you said earlier in the beginning of the program, they want everything fast. They don't want to – you know, they can't afford to be out there for an hour, 2 hours all the time.
No question.
Their time is valuable. So we as instructors, and I don't want to get into too much of this until we get into the second segment, but because then we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But I touched very quickly on the sound fundamentals as part of it. Obviously, you have to have a good grip and your stance and the posture and alignment and all that is important. But I think there's some of those things that have been, you know, if you go back in time, that are really not 100% accurate. I mean, you certainly have to have a good grip, but if you look at the history of golf and you look at some of the different types of grips, you know, like a Trevino, for instance, had a little stronger grip.
Yep.
Jim Furyk comes to mind. There, you know, everybody says, well, you've got to have a neutral grip, you've got to have that. It's not true. You certainly have to have your hands placed correctly on the club, and you certainly have to be aiming where you want the ball to go. But at the same time, you take somebody like Trevino, kind of throws all of those fundamentals out the window because his stance was open and he drew the ball quite often.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely correct, and that's why we that's why we start where we do with the game. That's again why I believe there is a way to help golfers get better faster. And you mentioned something earlier here just a few minutes ago that, you know, the game is changing and the technology and all the different things. But you know, it's a very interesting game, and that at its core, it hasn't changed all that much. It's a round ball with dimples and a flat face club, and when you consider trying to project that thing 200, 250, 300 yards, it was difficult 100 years ago, it was difficult 40 years ago, and it's difficult now. And that's just what it is. Now that said, you know, getting to what you're saying, that my point is that there are ways to make it easier. And I love what you just said about where, you know, instruction has always started, and, you know, it was with the grip and the posture and all these different things. And the problem is, you know, I start off golf schools a lot of times this way, and I'll say, you know, why we start where we do and why we do things the way they do is that if I start with the grip, my difficulty is whose grip? do I teach Paul Azinger's grip, or do I teach Ben Hogan's
right.
grip, or do I teach Lee Trevino's grip, or do I teach Josh Broadway cross-handed? So it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's a very difficult thing. Or do I teach the player to set up like Craig Stadler or Adam Scott? And, mm-hmm. you know, so we run into problems there. So we believe strongly that if you have to teach around the commonalities and then mm-hmm. take the variables and match those to what the player does. Those are variable things for a reason. They have to be matched, and that's hopefully what a good or great golf instructor does, is matches mm-hmm. those things properly, but starts with the core things that are so important. And if I can mention those just real quickly,
sure.
I wanted to just
yeah.
get it out there that, you know, what we're talking about here. When we talk about what we call the five simple keys and what we believe are the five commonalities of the game's greatest players of all time, they are, and it's not really in any specific order in sense that someone should work on them in this manner, because they should work on the mm-hmm. priority that matters to them. But the five simple keys, as we call them, would be, number one would be steady head. And all we're saying there is that the head is a reference point for what we might call a centered shoulder turn or a stable pivot, and that it should be fairly steady. It's not that it can't move. It does
right.
move. It moves an average of an inch in the best players in the world to and fro, and there is some movement, but it's a fairly steady head as a reference point for a good, you know, pivot or a shoulder turn.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is weight forward, and what we know from plenty of data that we've collected is that all the best players in the history of the game, and especially now, attain approximately 90% of their weight on the forward leg, or pressure into the ground under their forward leg at impact. So that's important, because an 18 handicapper, for example, might average 50% on that forward leg. And so it's a
right.
differentiator between the best player and the poor player that you can actually teach.
Right.
Third one is what we call flat left wrist, or an inline impact condition. So we're basically just saying that at impact, because of the way the club's designed and to hit the sweet spot and make the ball go in the air, hit the ball first and then the ground, so to speak, that mm-hmm. the shaft and the left arm going up to like the left shoulder is very much, say, in line, in one straight line. Mm-hmm. Left wrist isn't bent or flipped. That's a consistency, a commonality amongst the game's best players. Four is what we call diagonal sweet spot path, and all that says is that the sweet spot of the club, of the game's best players, whether they were a draw or a fader, and this is 99.5% of them, swings down, and again, the term is quote-unquote diagonally, in that it swings down like it would be coming down the roof of a house, not down the mm-hmm. wall of a house, not along the floor of a house. I think we find that the average players out there, like, trying to swing, they hear that talked about that the club, you know, of the best players stays on the target line for the longest amount of time. So they're trying to swing straight into the ball to make the ball go straight. Well, that's really not what's happening. I know you know that, three-dimensionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but a lot of people, everyone has to understand that three-dimensionally the club is moving diagonally, not only forward towards the golf ball, not only down from the top, but it's also moving diagonally outward, like coming down from the peak of a roof of a house down to the gutter. So it's always
sure.
moving, you know, somewhat into out in a three-dimensional way on its way to the golf ball. And then the fifth one is what we call club face control, and it's really just an education of what we know now from things like TrackMan and FlightScope and all the great technology that's out there. And it says that the drawers of the golf ball point the club face slightly to the right when they hit the golf ball, so the ball can start to the right and curve back. And that faders of the golf ball have the golf ball aimed at impact or at separation.
Mm-hmm.
They have it aimed slightly left, so the ball can start slightly left and curve back.
Right.
As simple as that sounds, we've all taught these people as instructors and watched people do it on the range, that draw the ball and start it left and hook it off the planet or fade or slice
right.
it and, you know, start it straight or right instead of a workable shot. So, you know, those are what we call the five keys, and when we teach a player, it's going to be in one of those areas, and, you know, that's, we find the priority.
Right. And I think too, David, one of the things that you know, people have to understand, and just because, when we move into the other segment, we'll talk a little bit more about
yeah.
instruction and that. But I think that something, too, that the instructors really need to, and I think this has been a problem that's been happening for a number of years, is, you know, there's been too much focus on sort of keeping the same fundamentals for everybody, and you just can't do that because everybody's built differently. Everybody's designed. It's like you said earlier about the you know, whose swing do you sort of mimic things after, or whose grip,
oh,
or so
correct.
Forth. You know, you've got, like, for myself, I'm 6'4", but most of my height is in my legs, and, you know, I certainly have long arms, but my upper torso is a little shorter than somebody 6'4", that maybe has a longer torso and a little shorter than the legs. So there's a lot of variances, and people don't realize this unless you've been on our end of it. It affects the swing in different ways, because
definitely.
Obviously some of the shorter players, like if you look at some of the really more solid ball strikers in the past, they tended to be, 6 feet and below.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're seeing, because some of the taller players had to traditionally have swung a little more upright, and just didn't seem to make the same contact as, say, somebody, you know, look at Nicholas, you know, as an example. You know, he's certainly not an overly tall player, but, you know, was able to hit some solid golf shots over the years and won 18 major championships. So, you know, he did something right. But, you know, this is something that I think that the instructors really need to focus on, and obviously the better ones do, but I think everybody, as a general rule, you can't, one swing doesn't fit all. Everybody's different. You have to allow adjustments, and like you say, there's certain commonalities that have to be there, but then you also have to take a little bit of what that person's bringing as well, and sort of mold it all and work it all together. But again, we'll talk a little bit more when we move into the next segment. So,
and I couldn't agree more with that, by the way. That was very well said, and I think that's what we love about the system, is we take what a player brings to the table and try to focus on a priority within that and don't change what they do. You gotta allow a player to be a player. You can't change everything, and you gotta allow them to be them.
You know, I can remember, and it's funny, I used to, years ago when I was working at a course, I was probably, maybe 16, 17 at the time, and I used to watch some of the junior guys come out there, and of course they were, you know, had all the lessons and so forth, and they, you know, some elderly gentleman would come out there that's been playing for, you know, 40, 50 years, and they figured they were going to show him up. And, you know, he had the most unorthodox swing that you could ever imagine. Of course, theirs was picture perfect and so on and so forth. And they'd come back in after their, you know, they joined up with them, and they'd be playing with them, and they'd come back like dogs with tails between their legs because this elderly gentleman beat them. You know, but he certainly didn't have the prettiest swing. But you know what I'm saying? But he knew how to work with what he had. And
yes.
I'm not knocking, you know, these young kids now, and obviously the experience has a lot to do with it, but he understood and worked within himself. He understood, he learned the game over a number of years, and, you know, whether he had instruction or not, I don't know, but he worked with it. And I can remember some of these young guys listening to them, and it sort of helped mold me as I grew into the game and things developed, what to look for and what not to look for, and not to put everybody in the same box, because you can't do that. And that's been a mistake, I think, for a number of years, maybe not so much in today's market, but a number of years, that was a problem for probably at least a decade. Everybody was lumping everybody into the same box, and you can't do that because we're not all the same.
Agreed.
You know? So those are some keys that for those of you who are tuning in, I'm just going to quickly just remind everybody that if you are listening to the program and you want to call in and talk to either myself or David, my guest tonight is David Wedzik from the Erie, Pennsylvania area. He is the owner of Golf Evolution, and we're going to let him talk just for a few moments about what he's doing up at Erie. He's also the worldwide director of instruction for Medicus Golf, and he co-authored Pure Strike, the 5 Simple Keys, which we were just talking about, and we'll talk a little bit in a moment or two on where you can get your hands on a copy of those DVDs. Certainly something that you definitely want to get your hands onto. But just to remind people, if you want to call into the program, the number is 646-716-4667. As I said, if you have any questions, or you can email your questions if you want to me personally at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. Go and like us on Facebook at Golf Talk Live blog, and send me a tweet if you want at Ted and Buck CEO. David, just very quickly before we move into the next segment, I meant to do this and I got sidetracked, and I meant to do this at the very beginning of the program. Let the listeners know how they can get in touch with you and a little bit about Golf Evolution up in Erie.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that. It's, you know, Golf Evolution is a 10,000 square foot indoor studio in Erie, Pennsylvania. We've got one of the only putting green of its kind, I'd say, which is kind of fun to talk about in the entire Northeast. And it's 2,000 square feet. It rolls 11 on a stimp meter. It has four chipping areas. It's got normal breaks. So we've got a lot of things that can be done besides hit golf balls inside. We love the, you know, we make use of a lot of great technology, and we have a lot of fun with all that. But it's really just a great environment for working on your game and practicing your game. And we're based right in downtown Erie, Pennsylvania. Our website is golfevolution.com. I mean, you can check that out and see what we're all about there. And then a little bit about what the Five Simple Keys Learning System is all about. If you'd like to know more about that, you can check out purestrike.com or fivesimplekeys.com. They both take you to the same place. You're able to get the DVD set there. It's a great five-disc set. And we also have a great, really active Facebook group. I know a lot of people, a lot of listeners are, well, pretty much everybody's on Facebook now. So the Facebook group is just called Five Simple Keys. And you can find us there, and we're very active there on a daily basis. So if anybody has questions about the system or wants to find out more, you can, you know, check out any of those sources.
And they can get in touch with you through the website as well, I believe.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Directly through the website is probably the best way. There's contact information there, phone numbers, as well as email addresses and such. And we have a great right through the website too. We have an online analysis system or curriculum, so to speak, where videos can be sent in, and we have monthly subscriptions available there too. That, you know, we'll take a look. Any of our instructors will take a look at your swing for you. So it's really all encompassing, and yeah, everything is available there on the site at golfevolution.com.
Perfect. I'll let you plug that again when we close up the show in a little while. David, as I said, we're going to move on to the instruction side of things. We talked a little bit about the player and how we can kind of move them forward in their game. But let's talk about instruction, and we kind of covered a little bit of it, so I'm going to kind of skip the past a little bit. Obviously, traditionally, golf instruction was sort of the basic, the five basic fundamentals, you know, grip, the posture, you know, stance, and that sort of thing. And that was what really everybody focused on. And that's not to say that it's still not important, but obviously technology and advancement has shown us that there are other things out there that we need to be looking at. And as we just talked about a moment ago, we can't sort of throw everybody into the same group. Everybody's different postures, different abilities and things like that. So those all have to be factored in. But let's sort of take a quick back, if you will, from where the golf industry has been as far as instruction and where it is right now, and then we'll talk very briefly where you see it going in the future. So let's, you know, in the past, as I said, it was more or less the five sort of basic fundamentals and worked on your game and, you know, hit a few balls here and there, and that was pretty much it. I mean, unless you had the ability to get private instruction. Am I far off the mark on that one?
I think that's very accurate. I mean, I think that's what golf magazines focused on.
Right.
I think that's what instruction focused on. I think that's where I think everything that was done, and this was done, and I'm a PGA member myself, and this was done starting with the PGA of America, and again going forward to the golf magazines and everything else. It was, you know, you had to start with what everybody called the gaps, you know, grip, alignment, posture.
Right.
Start there, get those right. You can't hit a golf ball unless you have those things perfect. And yeah, that's been. There's been a long time that's been being done, and so that, and frankly, that's still being done by a large measure of you know, golf instructors out there. I think that it's changing, but I think that's still being done, and that's nothing against the golf instructors that are doing that, because I think those things are important. But again, we talked about this earlier. I think the difference there is that you can't. I'm not a believer that you can teach those things as a solid set of fundamentals the same way to everyone. It just doesn't work that way. I mean, if you make me play with your grip and vice versa, we're going to have some problems. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know,
well, and that's the thing that I remember years ago, looking at some of the instructors that used to even be at, and again, I won't name the course, but the course that I worked at, was that was sort of the mindset of that day. And, you know, I'm going to be 50 next year, so, you know, I'm dating myself now. But that was kind of, you know, where the industry was at that time. Was it was just sort of the basic fundamentals and you know, good luck with it. And I'm not saying that to knock instruction. I mean, obviously, every game has to advance. But if they're sort of focusing on that today exclusively, you're not going to get the results, certainly not the desired results in the marketplace, because the marketplace is much different than what it was, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's very, and it's so much more competitive. And with the onset of all the social media and all the different, the reach that golf instructors have now, you know, if you're not improving your students, you know, someone's going to call you out at some level for it. I think that's what it comes down to.
Well, and it's also even in our conversations. I mean, as I'm sure you can probably tell, I'm a talker. And I've even had to edit down my conversations, even with my girlfriend. You know, she'll be, you know, kind of like, okay, yeah, hurry up, you know, this type of thing. And she's not a big social media person, so it's not, you know, that's not doing it to her. But it's just, it's the society today is just, the mindset is everybody is working at a much faster pace than what we were. It's not sort of this laid-back, easygoing of yesteryear. It's, you know, we're busy with our work lives, we're busy with our family lives and things like that, and we want to fit golf in there, but, you know, we don't have the time that we once did or would like. I mean, certainly if we could, you know, all be winning the Powerball or something and playing golf,
that's right,
we would certainly want those 1 hour or 2 hour lessons, but it's just not realistic in that market. So let's fast forward from yesteryear and let's get into the millennium here, if you will, in the millennium years, and where is golf instruction now? What are some of the key things out there right now that people need to be engaged and channeling through?
Well, I think the first thing is that, and there's so much of this available online that you can do a lot of learning on your own. And, you know, the last thing I'd want to do is take business away from myself or other golf instructors. But I think as a golfer out there, one of the first things that they need to understand is simply why the ball flies the way it does. And you know, there's plenty of videos out there, and there's confusing videos, and there's simple videos, and there's plenty of stuff that goes over all this stuff. But, you know, things like, you know, what the terminology might be D-plane nowadays, or ball flight laws and things like that. But if an average player can just simply get a good core understanding of, hey, my ball's hooking too much, and, again, with some of the information that's available to them in this, like you said, a fast-paced world available online or all these different places, they should be able to get a pretty good, quick understanding of why a ball starts straight at the target and hooks 40 yards left, or why a ball starts straight and slices 40 yards to the right, or why they hit behind a golf ball, and understand that, you know, a golf ball has to be struck first, you hit the ball first and then the ground. A lot of this stuff is available out there, and I think, you know, if you're looking for that, the quick answer, I think that's where you start. You do some of your own research. You start on Google. You get some of this stuff done, and, you know, again, what we call this fast-paced world, and find some answers on your own. You know, secondarily, I mean, there's, you know, we do it ourselves, and there's a lot of great, you know, online instructional opportunities now. For analysis and that kind of thing, that are at an affordable price. And I think I heard on your show last week when you talked to
Clint
a little bit. You addressed, and I think it was well said in that, you know, it's not only is it a price that's affordable and it's quicker for some people, it's like coming into everybody's kitchen now. You know, it's like this is where you live on your mobile phone. And so if you can, you know, if you can shoot a video on your mobile phone and you can get an answer back on your mobile phone, boy, that's a great thing. I see it heading those directions, and I definitely think that as golf instructors, we need to be there and ready to take advantage and answer people's questions in those ways and do things, you know, quicker for them, so to speak.
Well, and the thing that everybody's, I think, been fighting over the last – now, obviously, you know, today it's getting better, but even just a few short years ago, one of the problems, you know, we developed – my partner and I at the time, we had developed an iPhone app for instruction that people could take to the range or take on the course if they wanted. But one of the hurdles that you had to get over was, number one, you had to keep the video short in content. You know, had to get to the point and that sort of thing. For a number of reasons, not just because people's attention span isn't as long as what it once was, but also if your video content is too much and too sophisticated, then you have a loading issue. And I don't care whether you're streaming it or not, but if you've got, you know, too many gigabytes, if you will, of video, and the person's standing there for 3 minutes waiting for it to load up, you've already lost lost a customer and you've lost the interest. And that's a, you know, and that's why YouTube and things like that are great. People can get up there and they can see a, you know, 1 minute video and it's instant load and you know, it's high res quality and things like that. And that's a great area really for instruction to move into, and it has been moving into for the last few years. And as that technology advances, it's only going to get better.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I mean, we've made a big use of those kind of, like I said, we've got our own online, you know, analysis tools. We've got plenty of YouTube videos out there at the same Golf Evolution brand. And, yeah, it not only is a place, and that's why I was saying earlier, it's great that the average golfer can go there quickly and get some answers. But as golf instructors, by putting that stuff out there and available, business comes through your door because of that as well. You know, it's like, hey, this is
right.
This guy did this. I love this. I love this. This is a smart guy. This is a smart girl. I'm going to go see them for a golf school, or I'm going to go take a lesson there. So, it does come around quite nicely.
Well, here's what it does, I think, and it falls into sort of the marketing end, and it's not just a matter of promoting, but here's what it does differently than what it did, say, 20, 30 years ago. Years ago, if you wanted to take a lesson, depending on where you are, if you're in an area where there's several golf courses, you could kind of meander around to the different ones so you found a pro that you liked. But the advances of technology, you can go online in your area and you can see what videos and things like that are available, and you can go onto websites, and within the course of an evening or even a weekend, you can pretty much ascertain whose style you like, who speaks the way that you want to speak, and that sort of thing. And you can say, okay, XYZ Club, I like John over here. He sounds like he knows what he's talking about. I'm going to go and see him. Whereas before, you actually had to go there, and then you felt kind of you thought, well, I'm already driving up the driveway here. Let me go in and talk to John. Now you're talking to him. Of course, he's much like a salesman. He's trying to, you know, at that time was trying to get you to take the lessons. And then you kind of feel there's a sense of pressure. Now the consumer, what they're doing is they're sort of picking and choosing who they want to go and engage with beforehand. And they're kind of getting an idea. Yeah, he kind of fits the mold I want, or no, I'm not too fussy about that, so I'm going to, you know, check out this guy over here. And what technology has allowed the consumer to do is to broaden their exposure to instruction, as opposed to limiting it to just the local muni or the local course, whether they're a private member or not. It's allowed them access to instructors like yourself. I mean, you live up in Erie, Pennsylvania, but if I'm down here in Florida, let's say, and I'm a 25 handicapper and I'm surfing the internet and I come across your website or your promotional on Facebook, I'm going to say, hey, this guy's got some good stuff. And maybe if I'm up in Erie, or I might something online. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it brings a global market where before go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, a perfect example of that. I mean, I've had students to my academy in Erie, Pennsylvania, from 42 states in the last 3 years and 7 countries. And, in fact, I've got students here for the next 2 weeks from Moscow and Turkey. And, you know, it just goes to that. I think it goes to that they love the information that we're giving them, and that's telling, and I'm happy to hear that. But 20 years ago, they would have never been able to see that information. I would have never had a chance to share that information with them. So, yeah, I'm seeing it on a daily basis.
Right, and it's a good thing. And it's the same thing with myself, you know, with promoting the program and things like that, you know, just by word of mouth. I mean, obviously I'm not, spending thousands of dollars promoting the show at this point. You know, I'm kind of testing things out and seeing where it's going, and I'm getting great results. I'm getting, you know, individuals such as yourself that have agreed to come on the program and help educate some of the listeners out there. And it gives me, I could have just done this because I'm an instructor as well, and I could just get out there and spout off all the different things that I want to do. But what that does is it limits what the consumer can take in, because they're only getting my viewpoint or my opinion, whereas by bringing a myriad of instructors or, as I said, golf industry types on here, it's allowing them exposure. They can go to one spot, but it allows them exposure of many different talented men and women that have something to offer them. And then if they want to, you know, investigate them further, I'm going to make that available for them with my website, which I'll talk about in a minute or two, where the people that have come on this program, I'm going to be posting up their links and things like that. So if they're listening to the program and they hear somebody, let's say they're listening and they hear David this week and they want to know more about David, they can visit your website and your links that are going to be provided on my website mm-hmm. and be able to make contact from there. So that's something that I want to do mm-hmm. is engage many in the teaching profession and sort of, as I've mentioned many, many times, and people are probably sick of hearing this word, but I want to use Golf Talk Live as a vessel, if you will, for bringing instruction and the golf industry together. And there's a lot of great, you know, golf channel and things like that, but they're really focusing on the top echelon of not only the teaching professional, but also on the tours. And, you know, there's really nothing out there that's sort of focusing on everybody else.
Yeah, it's definitely a great hole that needs filled. So it's definitely appreciated.
And that's one of the not a problem, and I'm glad to do it, and I certainly appreciate it. And there's a lot of great instructors out there, and I know, obviously, you're at the top there as well, but there's just a lot of great information out there that needs to be pulled together. And I understand, you know, some of the other media outlets and things like that. I understand why they're going in the direction. And they're filling a market as well, and a very well-needed market. But there needs to be something that the average person can go to and get more than just one person's opinion. They need to be able to have, like I said, several voices and several viewpoints and several methods and things like that, and then make their own decision as to which way they want to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Good for everyone in that regard.
Exactly. This is why, and one of the other things I want to mention, as I do with all my guests, and I hope, David, that you'll participate in this. You probably heard me talk about it before if you've tuned in. But one of the things that I want to start in the new year is a segment called Coach's Corner. And basically what that's going to involve is getting a number of teacher professionals such as yourself, but as opposed to just one or you know, coming on the program, I'm going to have maybe two or three come on at the same time. It'll be more of an interactive with our listeners and things like that. And they'll be able to fire some questions out at us and then allow everybody to sort of have a turn and you know, perspective and talk about things and, you know, emails, tweets, that sort of thing. And really give them a sort of well-rounded. And the idea of this is not to have the same instructors on every week, but to rotate them out. So, you know, you might come on, you know, this month, let's say, and on one of the segments, and then it might be another month or two before you come back again. So that way there's some freshness to the program, but it allows people to get exposure to a variety of different teaching methods and styles and so forth, and also get some expertise. So I hope that you'll participate in that, David. We're going to start that in the new year. In January.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be a lot of fun, and there would certainly be some really fun and lively discussions there. So it'd be great for your listeners.
And I also too, in addition to the instruction, I want to treat it as a panel discussion where we'll bring some specific topics in. Maybe we'll talk about technology and things like that, and get everybody's sort of thoughts and where they see some of the mistakes that have happened in the industry, or where they would like to. And this is not to throw anybody under the bus or anything like that, but they're really discussions that need to happen within the industry. And I want the listeners of this program, as the audience is growing, I want them to feel like they have a voice as well and say, hey, I don't like this, or I wish you guys would do more of this. And get some positive feedback that not only we can help them with in their games, but also they can give us some feedback in and say, okay, this is something that the consumers want. We need to start taking a look at that, or we need to start focusing our business more on that and help some of the other teachers that are out there in the golfing business as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's the direction. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it sounds like you got that. I mean, the plan there is spot on, and again, I think the person benefiting the most is the person listening to the show. Then, I mean, the information that can be shared would be outstanding, especially in that sort of a format.
And it's not, you know, and it's not to take away. I mean, we all have our own websites. We all have, and that's great, and they need to continue on that. But there's really not, and I've said this many, many times on the program. I mean, and again, I'm not knocking any of the media formats out there. I mean, Golf Channel, as I said, I watch it. I know you watch it. There's ESPN Golf. There's a ton of them. We can go on for days. But they're really focusing on, you know, a lot of the key tour players and things like that. And certainly they do have some instruction, but it's very limited. It's, in my opinion, very repetitive. And it's not really getting into – and I understand they've got advertisers and things that they've got to adhere to. And I'm not, as I said, saying it as a criticism. But I really want to develop a format with, you know, pure instruction, pure golf that everybody can dial into and tune into and say, hey, you know, this is where I want to go and get some answers to my game. and get a response? Because I've actually heard a lot of people say that that's one of the criticisms they have with some of the sites and things out there, is that they're not getting a very timely response, you know, in their questions and things like that. So that's something that I want to make sure that when they're calling in or they're emailing in to the program, that we're right there and engaged and able to help them right away. So that's where we're taking this this program into the new year. Now, let's go back very quickly here for a little bit on the instruction. So obviously we need to keep things moving forward. Technology is great, but there's also some pitfalls to technology. Sometimes you can oversaturate the market by too much technology, too much bombardment with video and things like that, and it makes it confusing. So how do we guard against that? What do we do, and what steps should we be taking to sort of find a happy balance?
Well, I think that there, when you look at those sort of things, I think that, like you said, technology is going to have its place, and we're not going backwards from a technology standpoint in any way. But I think in order to talk about how we guard against it, I think I'd like to broach at least the subject of why we guard against it. And I think the issue there becomes, you know, you've got things out there like FlightScope and TrackMan and pressure plate monitors and AMM systems and all these great things that show us, you know, amazing bits of information. But at the end of the day, how is that going to help the 32 handicapped woman who can't get the ball in the air 4 out of every 5 shots? And
right.
And I think you get my point there. That
right. Well,
still,
yeah,
the masses of golfers. Yeah, go ahead.
No. You go ahead, finish your thought, and then I'll.
Oh, the masses of golfers are still falling in the 15 to 32 or 35 handicap range, and it's those golfers that we need to help the most. And I think the places that what we have to do is we have to be sure that we're not so caught up in every little, you know, bit of information that, again, we might get from an AMM machine that says, you know, that the hips didn't stall properly, or, you know, a pressure plate that says there wasn't enough, you know, pressure here in the swing, or you know, even a ball flight analysis tool. What we have to do, and I know I keep going back to this, but what we have to do is find out what those core key areas that the great players do and that the average player can achieve. And that's one of the big things I didn't mention earlier, but it's one of the big things that we try to focus on, is that anything that we're trying to teach to a player, I believe, must be achievable by players of all levels. And that's why the 5 simple keys are what they are. That's why what we teach is what it is. And I think that's how we avoid the pitfalls of technology, is that we make sure that anything we're going to teach or, you know, get up on the pulpit and talk about and say, look, this is the next big thing in golf instruction, and this is how you get better. It needs to be achievable / understandable by everyone in a way that it can help, again, Mr. or Mrs. Smith's game, because those are the people that we hope are spending money in the pro shop and taking more lessons and, you know, explaining them to them what, you know, again, what 3D ball flight is and how it may not matter. That person might just be trying to get the golf ball in the air and hit it 100 yards, you know? I think that's how you get around that.
Right, and the thing that you have to guard against as an instructor is information overload. You know, there's some people out there, you know, your techie type people that love all the stats, and they want, you know the ball flight and the launch angle, and they want all this information, and that's fine. But not everybody wants that. And if one of the things, the criticism, and I've mentioned this a little bit in the past, but in one of the earlier programs, I think, but one of the things that I noticed, you know, I pay attention. I don't dive into all the groups on Facebook and things like that, but I'll surf around, I'll watch things, and I'll kind of get a sense of the feel and flavor of things in a particular group. And one of the things that I've noticed is, there's a lot of talk in some of the groups about some of the technology that you talked about. And what I don't hear a lot about is, as you said, how is it helping, you know, Mrs. Smith get the ball in the air? And what I think effectively it has done is, if you're focusing too much on the technology side of it and not enough on the areas that you really need to be, what ends up happening is not only does the student get confused, but you get frustrated because you've got to keep on top of all this stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong, technology is good. We need, you know, it's going to be there, as you say, and it's going to be moving forward. But what I've also noticed in some of the groups is a sense of frustration, a confusion, even amongst the instructors, because, well, what do I do? What's the best thing here? What's the best thing there? And it's not about the actual instruction. It's about the gizmos and the gadgets and the technology that they're trying to get, because they think they have to have all of this stuff. And if you don't understand and are not focusing on the key elements, as you said, of actually teaching the golf game to an individual, all of that technology is not going to help them. It's only going to make them more frustrated, and they're going to drop out, and then you're not going to have the business, and you're going to drop out. And I've actually seen on Facebook a number of times where instructors have basically they're given up.
Yeah.
They just can't keep on top of it all. It's just too much, because they're getting information overload, because every time they go – and again, I'm not trying to throw names out there, but, you know, they go to the PGA merchandising show and they see all these new fancy things out there, and they think they got to have it. And, you know, they're spending money on all this stuff, but it's not coming in.
I could not agree more. I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think that goes on. I mean, in the social – aspects of, you know, the Facebook things and these different places where there's groups and people that want to talk about their thing and the next big thing and everything else. And to be totally honest, it's one of the reasons why when we developed a system for teaching golf, we put the word simple in there. this game is, we talked about this earlier, this game has been difficult for 100 years. It's still difficult. It doesn't matter if the drivers, you know, they're a little bit better and the balls are a little bit better. It's still a round ball and a flat face implement to hit it with, and it's a hard game. So we need to make this game easier. We need to use the technology properly. But like you said, the problem is that how can we take this incredible technology and how can we use it to help the 25 handicapper who's just struggling to keep the ball somewhere near the fairway, and that's that's where have the rub there, and we've got to make sure as instructors we cross that bridge and we use the technology in a way to keep it simple and so that it's achievable. Everything we ask them to do has to be achievable, and they have to be able to get over those first hurdles before they worry about whether their wrist interaction graph is proper.
Right, exactly. And as I said, I'm all for technology. I think it's great, and I think that it's certainly needed in this market, in the demographic that's out there now. I mean, obviously people are drawn to it, and the media is bombarding them with technology. So if you're not sort of keeping up with the times, depending on what market you're in, you're certainly going to fall a little bit short. But on the other hand, if you get too much into the technology side of it and you're not really focusing on the key elements that need to be involved, one of the problems that you're going to run into, and I've seen this myself, going around to some of the different places, is, they're trying to figure out how this monitor works.
Yeah.
They've got the latest software and they got this, and they're spending half the time trying to figure out, well, no, it doesn't do that, and they're clicking on this stuff. And meanwhile, the person's frustrated in the background trying to see their swing and trying to explain all this. And the average person out there, there's still people that are, I'm sure, still using Windows 95. And that is true. I mean, technology is great, but, especially some of the older generations, they're certainly keeping up with it, but things change at such a fast pace that we have to be careful that we don't get so wrapped up into it in the instruction end that we're forgetting the basic fundamentals that we need to be getting through. And I'm not talking necessarily, the grip and things like that. I'm just
exactly
talking about the impact and how the ball works and why it does what it does. Most people, to be quite honest, and I guarantee if you took a poll amongst your students that you have, it's great, but if you ask them at the end of the day, what's most important to them is they just want to get the ball in the damn hole.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And you know what I'm saying? They want to get it down the fairway. They want to get it on the green,
right,
as you say, and they want to be able to make some putts and shoot a great round. And, yeah, it's interesting and all of this technology, but, when you start seeing the buzzards flying around their head, you know, trying to absorb all this stuff, you're only frustrating the consumer. And that's something that we have to be careful of. And that's an area that, you know, all of this social media, it's great to be on top of things, and it's great to have and so forth, but we have to guard against and be careful that we don't get so waterlogged, for lack of better words, in all of technology.
At the end of the day, it comes down to whether you're a user of technology or not. I'm a person who uses a FlightScope X2 on a fairly regular basis, pretty much a daily basis, with the right students.
Sure.
I use the technology the way I think it needs to be used. But at the end of the day, it comes down to getting each individual student to be able to achieve certain small skill sets that help them get better. And for that person, it might be, you know, for this 25 handicap on the lesson tee today, it might simply be having their hips so their weight is a little bit more forward, just a little more forward, so they can, you know, swing in to out that few degrees more that stops that ball from slicing into the trees every time. Or it might be having a person, you know, understand how to just make their, you know, hips and shoulders work a little differently on the backswing so that they can hit the ball solidly in the air 140 yards rather than topping it every time. You know, those are great individual achievable skills that make a person happy and smile and feel really good about their golf game. And that's, like you said, that's all that matters to them at that moment.
Sure.
You know, and then we have to focus there.
You know, if you think it's like a kid today, as an example, you know, you can throw just about any toy in front of them and they're going to play with it for about 5 minutes. And then after about 5 minutes, they're going to shove it aside and look for something else. And, you know, they're not really absorbing what they're seeing. They're just sort of taking it all in, you know, for a few moments, and then they're kind of moving on to the next thing. And that's the problem, I think, with what the technology has done, is it's just like with the equipment, you know, we talked about earlier. Everybody's looking for the biggest and the best driver out there to get them that extra 20 or 30 yards. Well, if you don't have the basics and you're not working with the fundamentals and you don't have these, you know, five keys that you talked about earlier, you're not going to hit it worth a hill of beans. And I don't care what equipment you put in there. And I'll gladly, if anybody's listening out there that has a buddy in any of the top manufacturers wants to come on the program and challenge me on that, I'll be more than happy to talk shop, because I can prove it. Because I can take any person you can bring on the table, and I can stick a club in their hand, and if they can't hit a golf ball or if they can't make a decent swing, I don't care what you put in their hand. There might be subtle improvements, but you're not going to get 20, 30 yards. I mean, it's ridiculous. Even some of the top tour pros, you know, going from club to club is not getting a huge advantage.
Yeah.
And they know that.
Sure, sure.
You know, and again, I'm not knocking the manufacturers. I mean, I love all this stuff, and that's great.
No,
but we have to be real.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier. It's all great, and it's a huge advantage for the average player. But right, it's not leaps and bounds.
No, and I want to make you know, I would rather get that person whittled down from 25 handicap down to a 10 or a 5, then put that great piece of equipment in his hand and let him have some fun with it, as opposed to, you know, having him go out there and spend, you know, $2,000 on and looking like $1 million out there in the golf course, but then spend the next, you know, 6 hours whiffing it around the golf course and not enjoying themselves. And, you know, if anybody ever wanted to do a commercial, I think a great commercial would be to hit this point, and I know it's going to be a slap at the manufacturer's face, but would be to see a pond or a small lake out in a golf course with nothing but equipment floating in it from all the disgruntled golfers that have bought into this stuff. And again, I'm not trying to be mean or disrespectful.
Right.
I mean, I love, you know, and I know that the equipment is sponsoring a lot of people, and there's a lot of great advancements. But at the same point, my focus here is to make the golfer a better player first, then fit them up. It's like somebody going, for instance, if you get somebody new to the game and you're fitting them with equipment, forget about it whether you have a financial interest or not, but just if you're going to advise somebody, you're not going to put them into the best and most expensive equipment out there in the market if you know they don't have a game to support it, because it's a waste of money and you know that they're not going to be happy. You're going to certainly fit them well, and you're going to make sure that they're playing with a decent set of clubs and playing with a ball suited for their type of game. But you're not going to go out there and load them up to the T's, if you will, with all of this equipment if they can't play the game.
No, that's correct. It'd be a waste of everybody's time and money for sure. You got to get them a good basis first, and that's, you know, I guess that goes a lot to what we're talking about is, you know, making the game easier for golfers by finding simple, achievable things that they can do that, you know, the best example, the way I say it is this. If I've got a 20 handicap and they want to be a 5 handicap, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
That 20 handicap's got to do more things that a 5 handicap does. You've got to get more things in common with the 5 handicap. And that's, you know, that's what gets it done. You have to, you know, the 5 handicap, I guarantee, because we've done the research, has more things in common, more of the 5 keys, more of the 5 things in common with a tour player than a 25
right.
handicap does or a 20 handicap.
Sure.
So they've got to do more of those things. They've got to do more of the things that a 5 handicap does or a tour player does and know which things to focus on, mind you. But they've got to, if they do more of those, their handicap comes down, right? Not by the newest driver.
Well, and the thing, too, I think that people misunderstood is back, especially in the 80s, I used to hear a lot of this when a lot of the videos were coming out. They're saying, well, you know, if you're built like so-and-so or like, you know, Nick Faldo came out with a bunch of videos and things like that. And, you know, a lot of people in the industry said, well, you know, if you want to play more like Nick Faldo, you know, mimic his swing and things like that. Well, that's a very simple way of putting it. That's not exactly true. I mean, you can't stand up there and swing exactly like Nick Faldo. But, I mean, we understood what they were talking about, but it wasn't a very good marketing way because what everybody did is they started looking for videos. Okay, I'm kind of a short, bald, fat guy, so I'm going to go out and look for somebody that's kind of my – and that's essentially what people were doing. Well, I got to swing. This guy kind of swings with the flying right arm coming up here, and so-and-so's, you know, got the club real close here. And so they started sort of mimicking things like that. And
yep.
What it ultimately ended up doing was it made it worse for people. And that's not to say there aren't a lot of great videos out there, but it's just that the message was wrong. They needed to really make people understand that if you're going to follow or mimic somebody, you need to understand what it is they're doing, the key elements of their golf swing, and not so much just mimic the way they swing it. You have to understand what it is that they're doing, like you said, in the 5 simple keys. Those types of things people have to understand
right.
why the ball does what it does and the club face, so on and so forth. They need to understand that. And that really wasn't being taught for a number of years and is now obviously moving in that direction. So that's something that I think that we need to focus on as well in the future. And that's it, David. I think we've pretty much solved everything. If we could just convince the rest of the industry to follow suit, we'll be doing well.
We got to listen to this show over and over and over.
Exactly. David, I want to thank you. I know that you've got to go, and I want you to enjoy your evening, and I know you've got a busy day. We're coming into a Friday, and you've got lots of things, I'm sure, lined up. So I'm going to let you go here in a minute, but just if you want to give another quick plug for your business there and let the folks know how they can get a hold of you or certainly follow you online, that sort of thing. Go ahead.
It's golfevolution.com. That's our main website. I'm the owner and director of instruction of Golf Evolution. We're in Erie, Pennsylvania. Also, be sure I'm the co-author with Chuck Evans of the 5-disc DVD set called Pure Strike, the 5 Simple Keys. That's by Medicus Golf, and it's available at purestrike.com or 5simplekeys.com. And I know everybody out there is on Facebook, so our Facebook group is 5 Simple Keys, and we're basically trying to let people understand that the greatest players of all time have 5 things in common and really only 5, and they're all achievable by the average player, and no matter what methodology you might choose to swing with, these 5 things are always found and prioritized within those, and you know, you can get better faster, and that's what this is all about. Is we want golfers out there to have an easier time playing this great game and get better faster. So, you know, again, this has been a great time, Ted. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I appreciate the opportunity to come on the show.
Well, and I appreciate David as always. I've really, you know, here's the thing too that I look at this program is it's not just about letting the listeners out there, Joe Public, sort of tune in and hear some great instruction, some great comments and things like that, but it also allows other instructors to tune in as well and learn from one another. And I certainly learned from all of my guests. you know, there's some great products out there, there's some great technology out there, and we need to communicate, and this is a great way, and it's fun to message one another and things like that, and email, but this is a format that I wanted to put together really so that we could all sort of come together and talk in the industry, and also as an added bonus, let some of the listeners out there reap the benefits, if you will. And I also want, as I said, the instructors to be able to learn from one another and help one another out, because it's really what it's all about. It's not so much what we can do for ourselves, it's what we can do for each other. And that's really what the game is all about, and that's what I enjoy most, and that's why we put Golf Talk Live together.
Yeah,
so,
well,
David?
Well said, and thanks for having the show. I much appreciate it, and I've enjoyed listening to it.
I appreciate it. I hope you continue to listen. And, David, I also, if you have any other friends and so forth in the golf industry that would maybe be interested in coming on the program, by all means, you can give them my information. I'll either send it to you again, or if you still have it handy there, please pass it on and have them get in touch with me, and we'll set them up. The schedule right now is pretty much booked until the end of October, but we'll certainly squeeze them in, and I hope, David, that you will certainly give it some serious thought and participate in the new year when we bring in the Coach's Corner segment. I would really love to have you on board, and we'll work, you know, to everybody's schedule, of course, to make sure that everybody gets some equal time, but also that we're not conflicting with other things that you guys may be having going on. And I hope that you'll participate, and I hope that some of the others that have indicated in the past that they will come on again, not only in that format, but also, David, you're welcome to have an open invitation to come back anytime you want. If you've got something that you want to say and you want to get it out there, just get in touch with me, and we'll set you up to come back on the program.
Fantastic. Thanks so much. I look forward to that.
All right. David,
okay.
Again, have a great evening, and we will talk soon. Thank you very much for coming on Golf Talk Live.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Have a great night. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. You too. Bye-bye. Okay, we're just going to wrap up here in a minute or two. I just want to thank one more time. My special guest this evening was David Wedzik. He is the owner of Golf Evolution up in the Erie, Pennsylvania area. And if you're looking to get in touch with David and his group up there, you can visit their website. It's probably the best way, as he indicated. It's all the contact information, emails, and so forth. That's at thegolfevolution.com. It's www.thegolfevolution.com is their main website. And David Wedzik, is the principal owner and founder of Golf Evolution. So you want to get in touch with him for sure. Also, he is the co-author of Pure Strike, Five Simple Keys, which is available on DVD. I believe it's five DVDs, in fact, which are available at purestrike.com. So you want to check that out and maybe get a copy for yourself, or maybe for that golfer in your family. It would be make a great gift maybe for birthday or Christmas or something like that. So definitely check that out. It sounds like there's some great tips and drills to help your game improve. I want to thank all of you who have tuned in each and every week religiously, for lack of better words, into the program. I appreciate very, very much the support. We're getting a bigger and better audience as the weeks go on. Obviously, more people are spreading the word. Would really appreciate those of you that are listening in tonight live, and or those that tune in a little bit later on with the recorded version, that if you spread the word and have people tune into Golf Talk Live. And the link is blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive is where you can find us each and every Thursday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. The number to call in during the live performance is area code 646-716-4667. And, of course, you can email me anytime at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. And I really appreciate the listeners if you would go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/golftalkliveblog, and throw a few likes our way. We'd certainly appreciate the support. And I've also left the ability to be able to post comments on the Facebook page there if you'd like to. If you have any suggestions for upcoming shows that you'd like to see, topics that you'd like us to cover, or maybe you've got an instructor in your area that you think would extend some insight to the golf business and you would like to have them on the program. So we certainly appreciate that, and I want to just take this opportunity one more time to thank my very special guest this evening, David Wedzik from Erie, Pennsylvania, for coming on the show. It was a great conversation, David. I think we got a lot of good topics out there, and we hope that everybody that listening, that tuning into the program, learned something tonight. I certainly know that I did, and we want to continue that. Next week, one final thing. Next week, my special guest is going to be Mr. Bernie Pinder from Ontic Golf. He's the founder and president from the great area of Michigan. And he has going to be coming on talking about the putters that have been doing very well in Ontic Golf. And also coming back with him, who's going to call into the program, is my guest from a couple of shows ago, Mr. Barry Goldstein. He is also invested in Ontic Golf and one of the executive directors in that organization. So he's going to coming back and joining us on here. And if you remember a couple of shows ago, Barry and his daughter Carly Rae come on here, and she's now out at LSU in her first year as a freshman. And she's going to be doing some great things out there for the golf program. So we're certainly going to have her come back on in the future, as well as Barry on their own. But he's going to be joining next week, August 29th, which is Thursday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time here on Golf Talk Live. Mr. Bernie Pinder and Barry Goldstein will be joining us from Ontic Golf, talk a little bit about their products and how they're helping some great people out there. Thank you, everybody. Have a great evening. Thank you for tuning into the Golf Talk Live. God bless, and we'll see you next week.